Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day. Are you approaching retirement, or maybe you've just changed jobs? If so, you'll probably now have control of your 401k or IRA. Would you like to buy some property, notes, loans, start a new business, or even buy crypto? You can with a self-directed IRA. For more than a decade, I've been telling you about setting up a self-directed IRA through IRA Advantage. And while you may now hear other companies say they offer self-directed IRAs, you need to find out if they're truly self-directed. With a truly self-directed retirement account, you can make any investment the law allows. Whether you're talking about true diversification, starting your new business, or investing in private holdings, IRA Advantage through a truly self-directed IRA can make that happen. Take it from me, Lars. You've worked hard for your money. IRA Advantage will work hard to keep it yours.
Would you like to learn more about truly self-directed IRAs? Then visit IRAAdvantage.com. View our videos and call IRA Advantage. That's IRAAdvantage.com.
Critical thinking skills are the largest component of porn literacy. It's the ability for young people to analyze and ask questions about the media that they're viewing. Porn is meant to sexually excite a viewer and create fantasy, right? So let's go ahead and start with elementary age youth.
That's right. She said the words porn literacy and elementary age youth. Now, that's kind of a strange thing to hear at the start of my talk show, but you heard it right. It is part of a state program to push, believe it or not, so-called porn literacy on elementary school age kids as young as third grade. For those of you like me who've been a few years since third grade, that's age 8 or so. Porn literacy down to age 8. And no, it's not happening in California, and not that I know of in Oregon or Washington. Although it wouldn't surprise me one little bit to hear that Portland and Seattle have embraced this kind of nonsense. No, it's from Idaho, where the State Department of Health and Welfare wants to put in a sex ed curriculum, a curriculum endorsed by those bad guys at Planned Parenthood. They bought a program from a group that promotes what it calls queering education and normalizing the consumption of pornography by your kids down to third grade. That is 8 years of age. And I want to talk about it. In fact, if any of you know of this happening in your local schools, I'd love to hear about it as well. And if you're just hearing about it for the first time, it might not be the worst idea in the world to ask members of your school board, can you assure me that this kind of stuff is not being pushed on my kids at our school and that taxpayers aren't paying for this nonsense? Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. And naysayers go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. If you, and by the way, all those emails come to me. They don't go to anybody else. You can vote in our Twitter poll. And actually, the Twitter poll is on that same subject. Should we be teaching so-called porn literacy to kids as young as age 8? And if the public schools can't teach your kids to read, write, or do math, should this be the replacement for all of that? Now, this porn literacy program does not pull any punches. It actually features cartoons that tell kids about the value of watching porn using the cartoons that are deliberately aimed at kids. Listen to this.
Oh, wow. That's so big. I never knew it could be so huge. Hey, Jane, what are you looking at?
Yeah, the Idaho Freedom Foundation identified this new lunacy from public education. And they point out that in the state of Idaho, and that's where it's happening, I don't know whether it's happening in Oregon or Washington, but I'd love to find out, it actually violates the state laws of education of Idaho. It points out Idaho law requires sex ed taught in public schools to reinforce traditional family arrangements. Now, the IDHW, that's the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, promotes what Idaho law prohibits. IDHW takes funds from federal programs like the Personal Responsibility Education Program, Title V Sexual Risk Avoidance Education, and then IDHW acquires sex ed products from nonprofits like ETR, that's Education, Training, and Research, whose curriculum is developed and endorsed by who else? Planned Parenthood. And then next, IDHW instructs public health districts to implement ETR's Reducing the Risk curriculum in public schools. ETR's Reducing the Risk curriculum promises to teach abstinence instead. It delivers a variety of approaches, including the LGBTQ inclusive curriculum that, as they call it, queers education, with an emphasis on gender identity, sexual orientation, and behavior. And this is happening in Idaho. ETR also advocates for teaching elementary kids porn literacy, which includes instruction on kink and power, pleasure, sexual identity, sexual acts, and sexual exploration in relation to pornography. Listen to this.
And that when I've normalized watching porn and being curious, students are a lot more engaged in the conversation, but they're also building trust with me. It's okay if they have watched porn, and it's okay if they have thought about porn. I always make sure to say someone being curious about sex and or porn does not make them a bad person. It makes them human.
Now, I understand, because I've been an advocate for the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution for my entire career of almost 50 years. I understand that pornography, not obscenity, but pornography is legal and it is constitutionally protected. But we've also had states and local communities throughout the decades that have said, there's an age at which it's appropriate. There are ages at which it's not appropriate. Now, if I get a naysayer today who says, well, 8-year-olds, they should be taught about porn in school, I'd be glad to hear the argument if anybody is willing to make that kind of argument. I can't imagine how they're going to back it up, but there it is. And for the ETR, this is Idaho again, pornography consumption is a required topic in sex education. Although they admit the evidence is largely unclear whether sexually explicit media use influences future sexual health among adolescents. I might suggest it does not. Introducing graphic sexual content into elementary schools creates what they call open minds and prepares students for sexual activity. At age 8, in the ETR-sponsored training that's called Porn Literacy and Sex Ed, Sarah Diamond, Associate Director of Prevention and Education at the University of San Diego, says she hopes sex educators avoid stigmatizing porn as bad, but rather helping students reflect on their own values about pornography. Well, that's where it gets kind of weird. Because if you consider the hashtag MeToo movement, I know, I'm old enough to remember that from about 3 years ago. They kept talking about how objectifying women was not a great idea. In fact, it usually led to trouble because there were people like Harvey Weinstein that would objectify women to the nth degree. In middle school, they say students should be able to identify sexually explicit media and pornography. High schoolers should be schooled in finding out how porn that depicts racism can be harmful to a viewer. If anybody out there thinks this is a great idea, again, I'd be glad to hear it. Some of it involves watching a video called Amaze, Porn Factor Fiction, in which cartoon characters act out sexually explicit scenes. One young girl screams, and you heard the sound, "Wow, that's so big. I never knew it could be so huge." This is being pushed on kids. The curriculum has spread into Idaho schools, in the health districts or through the health districts, Idaho North Central Public District, which serves Lewiston, Moscow, Orofino, Grangeville, and Kamaya. They're implementing it elsewhere as well. It appears that almost every health district in the state of Idaho is pushing this. Now, my question for you in the Twitter poll, is this appropriate? Should public schools in the Pacific Northwest be teaching porn literacy to your elementary age kids? Now, I would say no. Maybe I'm old-fashioned. I'd love to hear the naysayer call and the persuasive argument otherwise. Today's Twitter poll brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about the perfect storm that is facing tenants who rent their housing and how the government has made that situation so much harder, so much more expensive, and so damaging and dangerous. And we'll talk about how the police in Tukwila are trying to find the Incredible Hulk who is picking up phone poles. We'll be back in just a moment. Your calls are welcome. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Oregon tenants face a perfect storm that's going to drive monthly rents to new highs, and your government made most of that happen. I know that some of you may blame the landlord, but that's just plain wrong, and let me explain why. As a landlord told me once, I don't set the rents, the marketplace sets the rents. Well, unfortunately, government is part of that marketplace. So how did Oregon lawmakers and the governor and elected city officials make all of this happen? Officials told the landlords, you can't kick people out just because they won't pay. And I warned you way back then, the cost of those people not paying was going to get passed on to other renters, maybe you. And now that's happening. And I'll tell you something. One of the people running for governor of Oregon this year, Tina Kotek, as House Speaker in 2017, she proposed to eliminate no-cause evictions. That's essentially happened now. And lift the state's ban on rent control. That's very close to happening now. She said, we need to make progress here. Well, government taxes and fees have gone up dramatically in the last couple of years, and that goes into your rent. Minimum wage increases drive up the cost for landlords. That goes into the rent. And then, of course, there's the cost of fuel. Talk to Joe Biden about that. He promised to put the oil companies out of business, and he killed America's energy self-sufficiency in less than 18 months. In Oregon, crazy land use laws and government mandates make it harder and more expensive to build housing. If you don't believe me, the latest example, even now, the government plans to make new landlords and people who build new housing install electric car chargers for cars that people don't even own yet. You pay the bill for all that extra cost, even if you don't have the extra $60,000 for that battery car. But they didn't cap rents? Well, they did cap rents. They said you can only raise the rent 7% plus inflation, which, thanks to FJB in Washington, D.C., now equals almost 15% rental increase in a single year. And then I got this note from Mad Mac in DuPont, Washington. Lars, President Biden's speech in Philadelphia was not a political speech in front of Marines during prime time. It was a change of policy. It was directing the full force of the government against MAGA. So here's the Democrat plan, in my opinion. The DNC pours tons of money into the RNC primaries to elect as many Trump MAGA candidates as possible. Biden then unleashes the federal government against MAGA. The October surprise will be declaring a national emergency against MAGA candidates as insurrectionists, and by doing so, make them ineligible for office. Although it'll be illegal, immoral, and outrageous, by the time the election comes and goes, they win again, and they have no accountability whatsoever. Signed, Mad Mac in DuPont, Washington. And our question of the day, and I think this is a good one, comes in from Bennett Rowe. I happen to know Bennett. I don't know most of my emailers, but he's a former law enforcement official. He's also a handgun and gun instruction guy in the private sector now. He says, Lars, I went to the sheriff's office yesterday to qualify and renew my H.R. 218 card. That's the card that allows former law enforcement officials to carry a gun almost anywhere in America legally. While I was there, I was chatting with several other retired officers and deputies. None of them were aware of IP, Initiative Petition 117 and 114, coming up for a vote in the next election. I explained to them it's going to limit their rights to own a high-capacity magazine and many other restrictions as well. That got me thinking, if they haven't heard about it and they're in law enforcement, the general voting population, including those who value their Second Amendment rights, probably don't know about it either. What is being done to advertise this bad law for everyone? Well, Bennett, I'm doing what I can, but I want people to spread the word. If you pass Initiative Petition 114 this November in Oregon, it effectively makes all gun purchases by all citizens illegal. And here's why. It says, well, to buy a gun, you have to get a permit. You say, fine, I'll go get the permit. Oh, but before you get the permit, you have to take a class. You say, fine, I'll take the class and pay the money. Extra hassle, but there it is. And then they say, oh, but the class has to be done by law enforcement. And the law didn't require law enforcement to offer the class, and it provided no money to make the classes happen. So you mean there's a requirement that to get a permit, I have to take a class, law enforcement has to offer the class, and yet there's no requirement that law enforcement offer the class? I know, sounds like a Rube Goldberg device. It actually functionally makes it illegal for every citizen to buy a gun if ballot measure 114 passes in November. There's my part of warning you what's coming up. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
The way has been paved by Trademark Paving. Just pave it. Serving Southwest Washington.
Well, I want to give today's Daily Grill to Mayor Bruce Harrell. You see, the city of Seattle has a brand new mayor, Bruce Harrell. He's made some good decisions. I think he's made some bad ones as well. But the city is in the business of handing out money, including about $780,000 that goes to a private club that was once led by Mayor Bruce Harrell. You say, well, that kind of stinks, doesn't it? The city is giving the Royal Esquire Club, which describes itself as a black men's social club, the funds to support the rehabilitation of existing cultural space. Harrell announced it. It is the fourth largest of 19 awards given to community groups by City Hall. The larger awards were intended for property acquisition or major projects, but somehow this club that was once led by Mayor Bruce Harrell is getting $750,000. Harrell, by the way, on Monday, according to the Seattle Times, was still named as the chair of the Royal Esquire Club's executive committee, although his spokeswoman says, he resigned from the club November of last year. But it does sound like connections will get you a lot of cash down at Seattle City Hall. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Mobile Joe's RV Collision. Get back on the open road and back to your adventure with Mobile Joe's. No body damage, too big or small, collision or paint repairs, Mobile Joe's RV Collision fixes them all. Now, this one comes in, and I left the name off at the request of the sender. Lars, I'll keep it short and sweet. Love your show, but I think we need more convincing. I know you've stated that you've known Betsy Johnson, who's running for governor, for 30 years. I've listened to Betsy at meetings for over 25 years. I agree with your abortion stance and that of Christine Drazen, who I've met a couple of times. You stated one of the main reasons for voting for Drazen is her stance on abortion. It is one of the main reasons. I agree, but that's not the only reason, nor should it be the main reason that people vote in this race. I'm afraid that if you stick to that response, I think people who think the abortion issue is extremely important to them, well, they won't vote for Christine just because of that. Well, no. Actually, I think they will. I think Christine Drazen is a good candidate. That's why Republican voters chose her as the nominee. She says, he says, Betsy is Democrat through and through. She may be running as an independent, but is Democrat philosophy on almost everything else. She was the chair of the committee that allowed the Oregon corporate activities tax, that's $2 billion every 2 years, to be sent to the floor for a vote. She absolutely had the power and authority to squash it, and she chose not to. I think a vote for Betsy is a vote for Tina Kotek. So do a lot of other listeners. Please let people know there are a lot more factors and reasons to vote for Christine Drazen than just one. Well, I'm glad to do just that, and thank you for the email. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Coming up, we'll talk about a major open-air illegal drug market right here in the Northwest. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. We serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. We've got a great network of stations, and we just added Forks, Washington, Forks Talk, 96.7 FM, KBDB, and we're glad to have Forks on board. We've got just about every corner of the Pacific Northwest, and in one corner of the Pacific Northwest, there is apparently an open and unabashed open-air drug market. And our friends at Willamette Week wrote about that. And the news editor, Aaron Mesh, joins me today. Aaron, welcome back to the program. And tell me what's going on. The way you described this, this is not a down-and-out kind of neighborhood, is it?
No, it's actually a fairly upscale neighborhood in Portland. It's the Elliott neighborhood in North Portland. It's seen an enormous amount of development. If you've been to Portland any time in the last 10 years, you've noticed these sections of the city that have what I could tend to describe as condo canyons, these places where an enormous number of apartment buildings have sprung up in the last 10 years. But if you walk just three blocks south of one of these condo canyons, you find a park where on the edges, there is essentially what I would describe as a drive-through drug market, where people in cars drive up and a dealer gives them their drugs and they drive on.
Sounds convenient for the people who want to use the illegal drugs. What explains why it's happening there, and what's it doing to the neighborhood?
Well, I think the reason why it's there speaks to larger conditions and larger inadequacies in the behavior of City Hall. So again, this is a city that, as we've discussed many times on the air, has essentially tried to move away from a police model of public safety. And this is a state that has decriminalized the possession of small amounts of hard drugs. And I think when you put those two things together, you find yourself with what we see at Dawson Park.
By the way, you just struck a nerve with me. I keep hearing this small amounts of drugs. But most of the reporters who say that or write that or show it on TV or talk about it on the radio, they never define what a small amount is. As I understand it, in most of the cases of the hard drugs, it's up to a month's supply of the stuff, which I suppose if you're talking about conventional pharmaceuticals, it's no big deal to have a month's supply of pills at home in your medicine cabinet. But when you're talking about cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, and other drugs, a month's supply is an amount that you could use for yourself or you could be a dealer as well. So every time I hear small amount, it conveys to the audience, oh, they just have a hit or two of this stuff. That's not exactly what they've done. The law, Measure 110, actually made it possible to be a dealer as long as you don't carry more than an average person might use in 30 days around in your pocket, and you can make a lot of money doing it, right?
Yeah, I appreciate your precision on this. I think it is fair to say that there is plenty of wiggle room in order to have what constitutes a small amount of drugs. Sorry, I'm thinking out loud here a little bit. That I think one of the reasons why prosecutors say it is so difficult to prosecute drug dealing cases right now is because people who are dealing have what amounts to a small amount of drugs or personal possession amount of drugs, because it's not like if you're a heavy dealer of fentanyl, cocaine, methamphetamine, the usual substances, that you're going to carry all of it on you at all times. Otherwise, you would be a dead drug dealer. So,
an imprisoned drug dealer, if they still have. I mean, that's the thing. Over the decades, Aaron, I know you and I have both read stories about big cities and small cities where the smart dealer keeps the big part of the stash somewhere, sends his mules or lieutenants or whatever you want to call them out on the street with, you know, half a dozen hits. They sell the half dozen, bring the cash back, pick up another half dozen. This is basically just institutionalized by the voters and the state of Oregon and its law saying, as long as you carry a small amount, go out and sell to all your customers. When you start to get low, swing by wherever you've got your main stash hidden and resupply. And if we catch you with a small amount, there's not even any consequence, which means we've de facto legalized drug dealing.
I don't think that's wrong.
So what is this community where, as you point out, a one-bedroom apartment costs $2,400 a month and they sell lattes down the streets and all the rest of this stuff, what are they doing about it? Because as the story points out, you've got bullet holes in part of that neighborhood.
Yeah, you have a church that the priest has decided to sleep in the back room rather than in the rectory because of fear that there's going to be gunfire at the church. You have families that are afraid to bring kids to the park. You also have, I think this is important, a place that is fairly sacred in the Black community, and that the idea that it's being taken over by crime like this displeases many longtime residents of this neighborhood. And I think there is a kind of soft racism in the idea that this should be allowed inside a place that is a traditionally Black place.
Well, and let me point this out. Can we put, I mean, as long as you brought race into the equation, is it fair to say that the police have told you that a large number, if not a majority of the dealers are people of color, and a large number, if not a majority of the buyers are white?
I know that the first part of that is true. I'm not sure the majority of the buyers are white. I think that some of the buyers are white.
I mean, because, and maybe if it is a majority of the buyers are people of color,
then the buyers are white. I think I would be
are white.
Saying that.
So in other words, you've got a community that is special to the Black community where people of color are selling the drugs and bringing the crime and the gunfire and the bullet holes into the neighborhood and putting people at risk. And they're being put at risk by people who are part of that community. And are they being called out by that community? And is that community saying to City Hall or the cops, hey, will you come down and arrest these people? Or are they using the latest trendy thing, which is, no, you can't arrest people of color because you arrest too many people of color. So please don't arrest them, because that's a mixed message to say we'd like to not get shot. We'd like our kids to be safe. We'd like our park not to be an open-air drug market. But by the way, don't arrest the people who are the predominant drug dealers in the neighborhood because of their skin color.
I think it is safe to say that the loudest voices in the neighborhood calling for more policing are people of color, Black people, who are calling for more policing in this neighborhood.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Now, is there any sign that City Hall is paying any attention whatsoever?
How do I say no in a charitable way?
Just say they seem to be tone deaf to this. I mean, Joanne Hardesty, you know, one of the biggest, racial chip on her shoulder all the time, always talking about how people of color should be treated safe, treated right. She should be the one leading the charge, shouldn't she? And yet that would call on Joanne Hardesty, who openly hates the cops and says so, has defamed the cops, has disparaged the cops. It would actually require that Joanne Hardesty say, gee, I care more about the people I love and the community I claim to represent than hating the cops. And I would actually have to ask the cops to come out and arrest people of color. But she's not going to do that, is she?
I think the most important theme of this story, and this plays into what you're talking about, is that for 2 years, City Hall has said, after protest, we hear you, we're going to stop using some of the same tools, particularly policing tools, that we've used over the years, which you and I can debate until the cows come home whether or not ceasing to use those tools was the right decision. But here's where I know we're going to agree. If you don't replace those tools with something else that works just as effectively, you are harming the people who live in that neighborhood.
I couldn't agree with you more on that. So, and anytime Ted Wheeler wants to own up to his promise to me several years ago that he would always come on at least once a year to answer tough questions, that lasted 2 years, and then he gave up on that because he doesn't like answering tough questions, because frankly, he's a feckless, worthless leader. But anytime he wants to come on and try to explain how he's going to actually help people in that neighborhood or any neighborhood, I'd be glad to give him all the time he needs. That's Aaron Mesh, the news editor at Willamette Week. Coming up in a moment, we got to talk about a new program for time off, family paid time off, and how fast it's going to crash and burn. And our parody guy has a few thoughts about Joe Biden bringing James Taylor to the White House to help highlight green energy.
Just yesterday evening on the White House lawn, inflation reduction was a silly thing. I woke up this morning and I rewrote this song. Let me tell you how it really seems. Whoa, it seems Biden has no brain. Says stupid things that his staff cannot explain. When you hear Joe speak, you think that he's insane. In the office, he can't remain.
Tough talker, yeah.
Whoa, it seems Biden has no brain. Gave a speech that I thought would never end. I'd say Joe resign if I really was his friend. Not going to the White House again.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. That's our great parody guy, the great and incomparable Jim Gossett. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and to the Radio Northwest Network, new affiliate in Forks, Washington. Glad to have them on board. I've got a mystery for you, and I just decided to do this off the cuff. I don't understand what is going on with Amtrak right now. You know that there is an impending freight rail strike. It may happen on Friday, or the unions and management may come to an agreement. It would be the first freight rail strike in 30 years. The Congress has the power to step in and impose a contract, but I think there are a lot of reasons not to want to have the government do that. Both from a union perspective and from a management perspective, imposition of a contract by the government, well, then why doesn't the government just take over the industry altogether? I know. I think that's what the folks in Washington, D.C. would like to do. They'd like to say, we're going to nationalize all the industries. And if you want to see how that works out long term, take a long look at what was one of the richest countries on earth, Venezuela, where you can't even buy toilet paper or gasoline these days. Why? Because they are so desperately poor, because socialism can overspend anybody else's money. But I want to get back to Amtrak, because this one, I'm just going to throw to you. Some of you, I hear from people who worked in the railroads, work on Amtrak. Here's what I don't understand. Word came down within, the last couple of hours that Amtrak is canceling all of its long-distance trains starting tomorrow. Now, I've got fond memories when I was a kid. My dad, mom would go back to visit my uncles who lived mostly back in Michigan. And a lot of times we would ride the train. We couldn't afford to fly. And the train was, frankly, for me as a kid, a lot of fun. Maybe a little tedious for parents, but it was a lot of fun. So I like riding on the train. But why are they canceling the rails? And if you read all the stories about it, let me tell you what they give as the explanation. In most of America, not the upper Northeast corridor, Washington, D.C., Boston, New York, and Chicago, Amtrak operates on its own rail, on its own rails. But in the rest of the country, Amtrak operates on the freight rails. They share space with the freight trains. So we have the possibility that on Friday, the freight trains, the engineers and all who operate those trains are going to go on strike. That means those trains are not going to be running. Now, I would think that for Amtrak, this makes things even easier. I mean, if right now Amtrak has to coordinate the movement of all of its trains so they don't run into the freight trains and the freight trains have to avoid running into Amtrak. If you clear all the freight trains off, I mean, not for a good reason, a bad reason, because of a strike, doesn't that make it even easier for Amtrak to operate? It would be as though if there were a nationwide trucker strike, and I don't want to see that happen either, but if they took all the long-haul trucks off the freeways, for those of you who drive on the freeways on your way to work or anywhere else, if they took all the big trucks off the freeway, does that make it easier or harder to drive on the freeway? Like I said, I don't want the truckers to stop moving things. They move an awful lot of the freight in America. God bless them. But if all the trucks suddenly disappeared from the freeway becomes that much more accessible to all of us. It's not nearly as full. There aren't as many trucks. As I said, God bless the truckers, but trucks do take up a lot of space on the freeways. So when Amtrak says, we're going to cancel all of our long-term routes starting tomorrow, and they say, oh, we're notifying everybody that we're canceling their ticket, oh, and we'll give you a full refund. If somebody is going on a long trip on a train starting tomorrow and you just found out your trip was just canceled, but you're getting a refund, what's your alternative? Try and book a last-minute airplane flight to where you were going to go? I can almost guarantee you that's going to be hideously expensive. So that doesn't really work. But I'd really like to know, doesn't it become easier to operate Amtrak on the rails if all the freight trains are not running because a strike happens on Friday? Or I have this sneaking suspicion. You see, Amtrak is still a government agency. I mean, they're an independent agency. They lose money every year. But they're an agency of the government. And most of the government is run by, who else in the deep state? A whole lot of Democrat liberals. And I kind of wonder, is Amtrak using the freight rail strike that may or may not happen on Friday as an excuse for the folks at Amtrak to show their support for their union brothers as we head up less than 2 months to an election? Or is there actually a good reason to say, if the freight trains aren't on the rails, Amtrak can't operate? I don't think that makes any sense. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Lars here with a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they would be? The answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with those empty store shelves. Is yours? Mine is. If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for every member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. That's what you need. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits right now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order ships fast and arrives discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails. If you want to dial into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com, and you can vote in our Twitter poll. You'll find that two places. You know, we tried to give you a little variety, at Lars Larson Show on Twitter. And if you're not a big fan of Twitter, just go to our website at LarsLarson.com. Your vote counts the same. And welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past almost 23 years now. And our welcome to a brand new RNW affiliate, and that is Forks, Washington, Forks Talk 96.7 FM, KBDB. Now, I want to take you on a little trip down memory lane, because if you've been following one of the biggest things that the Biden administration managed to get done, and it's not a good thing they got done, but they got it through. They got this massive tax and spend program that the president calls the Inflation Reduction Act. Now, does it have to do mostly with inflation? No. It has to do with about half green energy. That's about half of the $750 billion in new spending that was okayed with this bill. And the other half of it is mostly about health care. And if you say, well, why'd they call it the Inflation Reduction Act? Because Joe Biden in the White House said, well, everybody's worried about inflation. Inflation has gone crazy. Gasoline prices, while they've dropped back a little bit, are still hugely ahead of where they were when Joe Biden took the oath of office January of last year. $2.39 a gallon nationwide average. Today, they're well into the fours. They've dropped off the fives, but that's still very bad news. And when it comes to other inflation, as we've talked about on the show, inflation that Joe Biden declared was zero last month, July, the last month for which we have full numbers, was not at zero. It was at 8.5%. It just didn't go higher than 8.5%. And then in August, it dropped back by a couple of tenths of a percentage point because gas prices have dropped. But grocery prices are up 13.5%, the biggest increase in the cost of food in America since 1979, when that idiot peanut farmer, Jimmy Carter, was president of the United States. So they said, we've got to call it something to make it popular. Let's call it the Inflation Reduction Act. Although the president's spokeswoman, Karine Jean-Pierre, earlier this week accidentally called it the Infrastructure Reduction Act, which I think is probably more accurate. But half that money, about $350 billion of your money in these higher taxes that, by the way, are not going to hit just people above the $400,000 mark. No, they're going to hit people all the way down to $20,000 in annual income, although most of the cost is going to be paid by people from $200,000 and down. About 26% of the new taxes are going to be paid by people made a little less than $75,000. That may describe an awful lot of you, and if it does, just understand, this president promised no taxes, not one single penny for anybody making less than $400,000 a year. That is a bald-faced lie, and you should let him know about that when you vote in November. But I want to remind you of something else, because an awful lot of us remember when the government got involved in green energy before, under the Obama administration, except we like to remind people it was the Obama-Joe Biden administration. And they spent a lot on green energy. And they made all kinds of promises that we would have a solid national electric grid and all the rest of this stuff. So, who was put in charge of that program? It might not occur to you that Barack Obama put Joe Biden in charge of that program. Joe Biden spent years, and Obama made all kinds of promises. He's going to make millions of jobs. It's going to do all these amazing things. Let me remind you of the reality of what happened when Joe Biden was supervising the green spending in 2009 all the way through about 2011 as the green energy czar at the time. They didn't call him that. He already had a title, vice president. In 2009, do you remember the money that was promised by the Obama-Biden administration to a company called Solyndra? Solyndra made solar cells, and they claimed they had the latest, greatest technology. And if they could just get a gigantic loan, that they could be very successful. So they got Uncle Sugar, Barack Obama and Joe Biden, to sign off on a loan guarantee of $535 million, half a billion dollars to a private company that, by the way, had been buddy-buddy with Barack Obama and with Joe Biden. So they got Uncle Sam to be the co-signer, like being a co-signer on your kid's car loan. Well, you all know that if you co-sign your kid's car loan, if he or she doesn't pay the loan payments, then you, mom or dad, end up having to pay the bill. That's exactly what happened with Solyndra. $535 million loan guarantee. 2 years after they got the money, they went bankrupt. Now, the folks at the top of the company made a lot of money, and Barack Obama still got his campaign donations from those wealthy individuals, but the American taxpayers got screwed. And then, that same year, 2009, Biden talked about the Obama administration's loan of another $500 million, $528 million, to a car maker called Fisker Automotive that said it was seed money that would lead to good new jobs. Well, the thousands of jobs never actually happened. Now, Fisker, I think, is still around, but the car company did not make good on its promises. And then in 2011, just 11 years ago, Joe Biden claimed that the battery company called Ener-1, E-N-E-R-1, was creating new jobs in green industries that would, quote, ensure our competitiveness for decades to come. They got a $118 million grant from the Obama administration, not a loan, not a guarantee, a grant. $118 million. And 3 years later, in 2014, Ener-1 filed for bankruptcy. And then, of course, you've got Jennifer Granholm. She's the nitwit who keeps saying, well, if you don't want to pay $5 for gas because it's too expensive, buy a $60,000 electric car. As governor of Michigan, she granted tax credits to a convicted embezzler. She gave millions of dollars to companies that went bankrupt and to a lot of companies that promised jobs that never actually materialized. And what did Joe Biden do? He put her in charge as the energy secretary for America. And of course, Biden has waged an ongoing war against energy in this country. And he's done amazingly well. Since 18 months in office, he's done a lot of destruction. He canceled the Keystone XL pipeline. He killed 11,000 jobs, and a lot of them were union jobs. He rejoined the Paris Climate Agreement, which is going to kill somewhere between 500,000 and 2.7 million jobs. He put a moratorium on new oil and gas leasing on federal lands. That's going to wipe out about 250,000 jobs. So here's Joe Biden, who screwed up badly as vice president to Barack Obama. Because remember, Obama was the one who said, never underestimate Joe's ability to F things up. Only Obama actually used the F word. Never underestimate his ability to F things up. Well, he effed things up in 2009 and 2010 and 2011, and now here we are a decade later, and he's messing things up again because he doesn't care. He was even asked during one of the debates, are you willing to sacrifice hundreds of thousands of blue-collar jobs to make a Green New Deal work? And Joe said, absolutely, I would. And you know what? That's one promise that Joe Biden has actually kept. Your call's next at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Well, we've got another piece of the puzzle in our hands, and I want to tell you where this comes from. There's a guy by the name of Igor Danchenko, and for those of us who have followed the Russia collusion scandal, so-called, his name is very, very important because it turns out that the Steele dossier was really a product of what Igor Danchenko told to Mr. Steele, the former British agent who was hired by Fusion GPS, who was hired by Hillary Clinton and the DNC to put together a pile of trash about Donald Trump. And that pile of trash was actually grabbed by the FBI. They used it and they took it to a federal judge and they said, Your Honor, we have information right here from reliable sources and we want to get a wiretap on an American citizen by the name of Carter Page, because that gave them access to listen in on what was going on inside the Trump campaign. The FBI is dirty all day long on this one. They knew the Steele dossier was a phony. But what did they build out of it? Let me tell you why it's so significant, and then I'll tell you about the new information we've found out about Igor Danchenko. So you have the Steele dossier. I've read through it. It reads like some kind of cheap, really badly written novel. It involves allegations of prostitutes in a Moscow hotel urinating on a bed at the behest of Donald Trump. I mean, it includes crazy stuff like that. Now, was it real? No, it wasn't real. But it was fed to Christopher Steele by Igor Danchenko. And what did the FBI do? They used it as a predicate to wiretap an American citizen. They used it as an excuse to surveil a presidential campaign. Hillary Clinton paid to have this created. Now, we know that's a fact. We know that she channeled the money to pay for it through a Seattle law firm called Perkins Coie that acted as the cutout, because she and the DNC paid money to Perkins Coie for various different purposes. They paid some of the money to Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS hired this former secret agent, and the former secret agent got most of his information from Igor Danchenko. And then they shot the thing around. They tried to get various media outlets, the big newspapers, the big TV networks, to look at this and put it on the air or put it in print. And they were told by most of the reporters, we're not touching that thing. That looks like a pile of garbage. Until they finally managed to get the FBI to pick it up. Then it goes into the presidential daily briefing, and the rest is history. What did we get out of that? A Russia collusion narrative that continues to this day to some extent. There's still people who believe that nonsense. We got the two-year Mueller investigation that ended up with a conclusion that no, Donald Trump was not elected with the help of Vladimir Putin or Russia or anything like that. It was all just a gigantic fraud. It was used by Hillary Clinton to try to keep Donald Trump from getting elected in 2016. That didn't work. Then they used it to try to tie his administration up in knots. That did work to some extent. They used it for a lot of different purposes. But then we find out this week, this is the big news. What do we now know about Igor Danchenko? He was on the FBI's payroll. Not as a W-2 full-time employee, not as a special agent. He was hired by the FBI as a confidential informant in 2017. Now, hold on a second. They know this guy is dirty. They finally got rid of him, and he was charged with crimes in 2021 as part of John Durham's probe into the Trump-Russia investigation. He is accused of lying to the FBI about his sources for the claims he made in the Steele dossier. The charges about statements that Danchenko made to sources that he used in providing information for an investigative firm. The new filing that has been filed by John Durham shows that the FBI hired Danchenko after having interviewed him about his work on the Steele dossier months earlier. He's accused of making false statements regarding the sources of the information long before Danchenko's involvement in the Steele dossier. He was the subject of an FBI counterintelligence investigation in 2009. He was a so-called analyst at the Brookings Institute after one of his colleagues said that Danchenko asked if he was willing to sell him classified information. Well, the FBI finally closed that probe in 2011 because Danchenko left the country. But the FBI did not share Danchenko's concerns with the Justice Department. The DOJ Inspector General found in 2019 that the FBI had relied on information from the Steele dossier, even though Danchenko cast doubts on its contents. The FBI finally ended its relationship altogether with Danchenko. When? Well, I want you to think about this. They finally cut off all ties with Danchenko in October of 2020, a month before the November 2020 election. In other words, he had served his purpose at that point, and they were finally glad to get rid of him. They had paid him. They had him on the payroll. They used him as a confidential informant. They used the information any way they chose to. They put false information in front of a federal judge. You know, these days, I wouldn't trust the FBI with anything. They are a dirty agency, and they've been doing all kinds of things. They raided Donald Trump's home. They've now served subpoenas on people like former New York Police Commissioner Bernard Kerik, on the pillow guy Mike Lindell. I mean, the FBI is a dirty agency all day long and twice on Sunday, and I think they have a lot to answer for. To your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let's start with Ron. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Lars. Well, looks like we're carrying on with some more deception from the Democrat Party reference our future voting. I can see now this morning I had posted some information on the internet, and they're back to book burning again. They got a warning at the very bottom of the page when you post things now that says most relevant is selected, so some comments have been filtered out. Who do you think those people are going to be exactly there, Lars?
Yeah, you know what's happening. Facebook is playing games with information because they're trying to influence the outcome of elections.
Well, let me tell you what I posted this morning. Spaceweathernews.com is reporting that the Democrats' science is a bunch of fraud, that from this day forward, it's going to get colder and colder for the next 10 to 12 years before the magnetic global flip of the poles.
I believe you're right. I believe you're right. Yeah, and in fact, if you remember, if you go back to the 70s and early 80s, most of the scientists who were talking to the popular press were saying, we think we're headed for another small ice age. And then, of course, they got the global warming machine going because it paid a lot of dividends to the people involved in it. Al Gore got rich. James Hansen at NASA got rich. A lot of people got rich, and they made a lot of hay by saying, well, we're going to have uncontrollable global warming. The problem is when you cripple our ability to have a solid energy supply, and we may be heading into colder times when we're going to need that energy, and we're already running short of energy. We've run short of gas. That's why the price is up. We've run short of electricity. That's why the price is up, and why some modern states, like even California, can't manage to keep the lights turned on all the time. And they're telling us we should have fewer ways to generate electric power. It makes no sense at all. Ron, thanks for the call. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'm glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. One of the things I brought to your attention is that over the last less than 12 months, there have been a couple of dozen attacks on what are called pregnancy resource centers. And the attacks keep on coming. In fact, there are some places where the local officials, if they're, you know, liberals and Democrats and progressives, they've literally said, we want to make it illegal for people to operate pregnancy crisis centers, even though all they're really involved in is simply offering information. In other words, they're engaging in what the Constitution calls First Amendment protected free speech. Your God-given right to free speech, but protected by the Constitution. Well, I wanted to get an update on what's going on with the crisis pregnancy centers around America. Reverend James Harden is the CEO of Compass Care Pregnancy Services, and his centers have come under both physical attack. I don't know if you're under legislative attack yet or not, Reverend Harden, but welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back, Lars. It's great to be with you.
It's kind of amazing to me. I mean, I've been in the news business for almost half a century, and you'd think this would be a bigger story, that dozens of places around America, pregnancy resource centers or crisis pregnancy centers, have come under physical attack. They've been firebombed. They've been ransacked. They've been vandalized. And yet the mainstream media seems to not care a whole lot about the fact that that's happening.
You're exactly right. I've said this before and I'll say it again. It is the pro-abortion Kristallnacht. And, it's the mainstream media refusing to send the outcry to the public. It's the political elite refusing to denounce the violence. Oh, and by the way, we are being attacked legislatively now. They've weaponized the legislature in New York against pro-life pregnancy centers, and they want to essentially legislate us right out of business.
And legislate you by what? By prohibiting free speech? Because that's all you're really engaged in, isn't it? I mean, I understand pregnancy resource centers may give out a few diapers, but for the most part, their primary purpose is to give young ladies who are pregnant some advice and an alternative to killing the baby.
Yes, and you're exactly right. And, you know, we provide ethical medical care, and one of the tenets of ethical medical care, what makes it ethical, is that women have informed consent, which is a speech function, meaning you educate women about all of their options and specifically about their condition, and that's what they're trying to suppress. They don't want us to talk about what abortion is and does to women and children, and that's what we're all about. We provide abortion information, informed consent.
So if a young lady comes to you and says, look, I don't know what to do, I'm pregnant, I don't have a husband. I don't have a father. The father of my baby is not going to stand up and do the right thing, whether it's whether it's financially support or support otherwise a baby. What am I going to do? I need to go get an abortion. And you say, well, you could have the baby and give it up for adoption. You could have the baby and care for it yourself, love it yourself. I mean, there are lots of options. And once she hears those options, you and I have talked about it. You have no way to compel her to do one thing or another. If you persuade her and she says, I'll keep my baby, good. Yeah, but you've also described to me that you have the experience of young ladies saying, no, I'm going to go ahead and have the abortion anyway, and it's easier. I'll just walk down the road to Planned Parenthood. And you've had some people do that as well. So the options are open to her. She just walks down the road with more information than she had before.
Exactly. She walks down the road empowered to make a truly informed decision, whereas the abortion industry is not interested in informed decisions. They're interested in the bottom line. And, you know, the largest abortion business in the world is Planned Parenthood, and they increased their bottom line during the COVID years to $139 million. They received $600 million, over $500 million in taxpayer funding. And they get all this money from the government. We don't get anything from the government, and we provide all of our services for free, and at no cost to her. We're actually providing for her unmet health and resource needs like no one else does. And what do abortionists do? Well, one thing: it's abortion. And how do I know that? Ask why the abortion businesses are closing in the states that made it restricted.
Because the number of abortions is down. So Reverend Hardin is the CEO of Compass Care Pregnancy Services. What's the latest attack? And I think people may find this bizarre when you describe what Google and Yelp are doing to pregnancy resource centers.
It is quite bizarre. There is an intentional censorship going on of disfavored pro-life pregnancy centers. So we were attacked not just physically by pro-abortion terrorist group on June 7th. We were also attacked online by a negative one-star Google review propaganda campaign. They wiped us off Google. It's listed us as permanently closed. All of our locations, our patient load tanks, women can't find us, or we're not even on the maps. And we're trying to work with Google. They wouldn't work with us. And then they put us back online at 1:30 in the morning, 1 hour before we were firebombed on June 7th. That sounds strange to me. But then after that, we had Letitia James, New York's
attorney general.
Yep. Yeah, she came up with an open letter to Google saying, wipe us off the maps. We had 21 federal legislators going open letter to Google saying, disallow them from advertising on Google. And what did Google do? What did Yelp do? With one day apart, they did exactly what they were told to do. They wiped us off the maps, and they disallow us from they're censoring all of our advertising. And they're putting warning labels on and additional click-through requirements for people to actually find us. This is censorship, plain and simple, and it needs to be prosecuted. Interestingly enough, we have 17 attorneys general that signed another open letter. They're pro-life, though. And they said, Google, if you give in to these demands from these pro-abortion politicians, we're going to investigate you for antitrust concerns. Here's a quote. We cannot. This is from the attorney generals, the pro-life attorney generals. We cannot imagine a potential antitrust violation more odious to American ideals than the deployment of monopoly power to suppress the expression of a particular idea done at the behest of government actors. And by the way, this is all to protect the activity and the speech of pro-life pregnancy centers.
You know, it's funny, Reverend, over the years, I've told my audience a few times that I've asked prosecutors about this. I said, there are things you're not allowed to do. You know, certain kind of activities, recording people, you know, invading their privacy that a private individual might be able to do. But if you go out and get a private individual to do it on your behalf, aren't they acting as your agent? And sure enough, they tell me, yeah. And if anything we're prohibited from doing as a part of government, we can't get another actor to do it on our behalf. If an individual citizen goes out and does it on his own say-so, that's one thing. But we can't go out and say, we can't get away with this. You go out and do it for us, because all they're doing is acting as an agent of the prosecutor. It sounds like that's what Letitia James has done.
That's exactly what Letitia James has done, and the Biden administration and others. In fact, you're probably one of the more informed people I've ever spoken with about this issue, because I just finished reading, and what you just said, in an August 2nd complaint filed against the Biden administration by the attorney generals in Missouri and Louisiana. And they said just what you said in their complaint, that the government is coercing these companies to do something for them, to censor disfavored people or disfavored ideas from the public square. And the new public square, by the way, is Google and the social media platforms.
And people, I understand why people, if they say, well, I looked to see if there was one of those centers in my neighborhood, you know, you put in a pregnancy resource center near me, and if Google or Yelp or other search engines say, I'm sorry, there's nothing anywhere near you, closest one is a long ways away, people say, well, it must not exist near me, because they assume it's like looking in the phone book in days gone by. If it's not in the phone book, it doesn't exist. Reverend James Hardin, keep up the good work. He is the CEO of Compass Care Pregnancy Centers. It's a pleasure to have you on, Reverend. Back in a moment, your calls and naysayer calls as well at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Wednesday. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here on the Radio Northwest Network every single day. And if you want to call in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com, and I'll get to your emails in just a moment. But I first have to tell you, this segment of the show is brought to you by nickshivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Now, our Twitter poll today is a thorny one. Should public, and you're not even going to believe it when I ask the question, but should public schools in the Pacific Northwest be teaching porn literacy to your elementary age kids? And if you say, well, where's that happening? Turns out the state of Idaho is doing exactly that. The Idaho Department of Health and Welfare is putting in a sex ed curriculum that actually violates the state law. The state law in the state of Idaho says you're not allowed to do the things that they are doing. Idaho law requires sex ed to be taught in public schools that reinforces traditional family arrangements. Now, maybe your family teaches 8-year-olds about porn literacy and about the joys of watching porn. If so, that would be an interesting family. I would suspect that most families do not. So the question, if you want to answer it, at Lars Larson Show on Twitter or LarsLarson.com on the web, should public schools in the Pacific Northwest be teaching porn literacy to elementary age kids as young as 8 years of age? I would say no to that. You can vote any way you like, at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. And by the way, I'm going to reach out to the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare and find out whether or not they are willing to come on and explain why they think that something like this is an appropriate thing to teach in public schools. Because it's not even coming in through the front door. It's not coming in through the Department of Education and then to school superintendents and then to principals and then to teachers. It's coming in via the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, which is promoting a curriculum that it obtains from Planned Parenthood, who obtains it from a number of other groups that produce this as private sector entities. I do want to draw your attention to one thing, though, and you may see stories about this. This involves Oregon, but Oregon has paid family medical leave. And beginning next year, it is going to be available. Benefits will be available starting in September of next year, so just about 12 months from now. Now, it was passed about 3 years ago by the state legislature, and the idea, kind of like some of the crazy ideas, long-term care insurance that Washington's legislature passed that was financially flawed from the get-go. But here's what they said. They said, we want people to be able to take time off for three reasons: to care for a newborn baby, to recover from a health ailment, or to deal with repercussions from domestic violence. All of that sounds well and good. They also said to deal with repercussions of sexual assault or harassment. They call that safe leave. And they want you to be able to take a percentage of your regular wages while you're taking time off. Because most people, if you said you can take 12 weeks off under family medical leave, you'd say, yeah, but I can't afford to go 12 weeks without a paycheck. So here's the way they describe it. To be eligible to take up to 12 weeks of paid leave, workers have to have worked at a job and earned at least $1,000 in that year before they take the leave. Well, even at minimum wage, $1,000 is what a full-time minimum wage worker makes in about 2 weeks. So you could literally go to a job, and I would expect that there are going to be people who are going to try and game this system as well. Go to a job, work it for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, earn the $1,000. You've paid a few cents, literally, into the fund, and then you can take 12 weeks off. And you only pay 1% of your wages, and you only put in 60% of the money. The employers have to kick in the other 40%, and then you get to collect benefits. Can anybody see how that's going to be gamed and gimmicked by people? It's going to be defrauded, and the system is going to quickly go broke because the amount of money being paid in is not nearly as much as what's going to go out. Let's go to Catherine in the Tri-Cities listening on AM 610 KONA. Catherine, you heard us talking about the porn education in Idaho. What do you make of that?
It's ridiculous. But I want to say my daughter's a teacher in the Tri-Cities, and none of the people that work with her want to teach that stuff. And the sex ed, none of them want to do that, and they don't. So what makes the Idaho teachers want to do that?
I don't know why. Well, I would imagine that some of them would say, look, they've told me this is the curriculum. They've told me I have to teach it, the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. And if they're pushing it in and the schools are accepting it, the pushback should come from individual teachers, from principals, from superintendents, and from school boards. And I imagine if they push back hard enough, they might actually be able to avoid it. But if a state agency is saying this is what you're going to have to teach, and a teacher says, I don't want to lose my job, and they're not being defended by their principal or their superintendent, what choice do they have? They can quit,
well,
I guess.
That's what they're doing here. They push back so hard that they just don't do it.
Well, I think that would be a great result, and let's hope the folks in Idaho do the same. Although, as I said, it wouldn't surprise me one little bit if some of the bigger cities in both Oregon and Washington are doing the same kind of thing, and parents are blissfully unaware that it's even happening. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Oregon Utility Notification Center wants to remind you that whether you're planting a tree, building a fence, or just making improvements around your farm or home, click or call before you start your work to get the area marked. Then dig safely and avoid contact with buried utilities. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones. Know what's below. Call before you dig. For more information, visit us online at digsafelyoregon.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We'll do that shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And, of course, naysayers always go to the head of the line. If you want to vote in our Twitter poll, you can find that two places. You don't have to put up with Twitter, and I don't like Twitter either. At Lars Larson Show on Twitter or LarsLarson.com on the web. Email address is easy to remember. That's talk@LarsLarson.com. It is a great pleasure to welcome back to the program the woman who, if there is any justice in this world, and if we get a fair election, will be the next U.S. Senator from the great state of Washington. And I have a dog in the fight because she will be my U.S. Senator, and I'll actually be proud of my representation in the upper chamber at that point. Tiffany Smiley. How are you doing, Ms. Smiley?
Hi, Lars. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
I'm glad to do it, and you have my endorsement. I want you to beat this left-wing liberal Patty Murray. I think you've done a good job of pointing out that she's been there for not quite a third of a century, three decades anyway, and Washington really doesn't have anything to show for it, does it?
That's right. I was 11 years old when Patty Murray was first elected, and just look at, you know, the current controversy of Patty Murray not wanting to debate me. You know, I used to question, is she afraid of debating a farm girl from Pasco, Washington, or is she afraid of defending her 30-year record? And the truth of it is, she has no legs to stand on. You know, I'm talking to voters all over Washington State who are saying, where has she been? You know, she went on the Senate floor June of 2020, called for funds to be diverted away from our police force. And then when recklessness and criminals destroyed our city, trickled out into our community, she was nowhere to be found. And they said, you know, we didn't hear about Patty Murray until she came out attacking you. And just look at her ads. All she does is attack me. She has nothing to stand on.
No, and in fact, that's the part that I find the strangest. I mean, I've offered up debates between candidates for Congress and Senate before, and it always floors me when somebody says, I really believe in this stuff, but I'm not willing to have a debate. If Patty Murray thinks she's on good, solid ground in defending the thing she stands up for, you'd think she'd say, bring on the debate. I'm gonna drill that Tiffany Smiley right into the debate stage. She'll be sorry she ever walked up there. Except that when somebody says, "Oh no, I don't want to be in a debate with her," it tells me they don't have the courage of their convictions, right?
That's exactly right, and it's a disservice to the voters of Washington State. I mean, I look at that as complete disrespect to the people that she is supposed to be serving. But it's clear, you know, we know she serves Washington D.C. That's who she cares about. And it was popular to defund the police. So, of course, that's what Patty Murray did. She doesn't care about Washington State. That's what I'm here fighting for. I'm fighting for Washington State. And I'm very proud of my agenda of recovery and reform that we have put out. I'm announcing a new policy every single week because Patty Murray is hurting families here. There are families who are trying to feed their kids and can't, or having to decide, you know, do I put gas in my car or buy a gallon of milk? The difference in how we vote this November couldn't be more of a contrast. I will combat that. I will lower the cost. I will get cost of food and groceries down. I will unleash American energy independence, which will help offset costs for families. And I think it's important to know that, you know, Patty, with this inflation, I call it the Inflation Production Act, because that's exactly what it is. It's not a reduction act. She was the deciding vote for an excise tax on natural gas. So everyone in Washington, you're going to see your energy costs skyrocket heading into the winter. This is Patty Murray's agenda. I will change that. We can lower costs. We do not have to be living the way that we are in Washington State under Patty Murray's policy.
By the way, I wanted to mention your husband. He's an active duty Army officer, and you say, okay, thanks for your service, except a lot of people may not realize your husband made history. He's the first blind active duty Army officer. Would you mind explaining how that came about? Because Patty Murray is the one I like to remind people. She stood in front of a high school class and sang the praises of Osama bin Laden, and I will never let people forget that. She takes the side of the terrorists. Your family has had real losses because of the terrorists, and your husband in particular.
Yes, and she did that after 9/11. And it's absolutely, you know, decision couldn't be more clear. My husband, our life forever changed when I was 23 years old and received the call that my husband was clinging on to life. One thing was certain is he'd never see again. He was blinded by a suicide car bomb in service to our country in Mosul, Iraq. And then, you know, truly the reason that we're fighting is because we really experienced, you know, policy affects real people. And I had to take on the Department of Defense when Scotty was in a coma and have a voice for himself, took on the Army and the DOD, helped Scotty make a miraculous recovery. Thank God I was a nurse, and believed in this crazy idea that a blind person should be afforded the ability to continue on active duty. I saw Scotty as being able to give back, and I wanted life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for him, everything that he was for all of us overseas. And so he took on the Army, built a coalition, and he went on and became the first blind active duty officer to ever serve our country. We served our country for over a decade with him completely blind.
Well, the fact that his eyes don't work doesn't mean that his brain is still working. And so, we shouldn't just talk the talk about people who are disabled. The other thing I'm encouraged by is you've taken on the issue of the elections, because a lot of us had very serious concerns and still do about the conduct of the 2020 election. You say we've got to get this under control and get a system Americans can trust.
Easy to vote and hard to cheat. We need confidence in our election system. And one thing that I think is important is that we need to ensure that the efforts to increase voter participation, that they do not undermine the confidence in our elections by banning federalization of elections. I think, me and Patty couldn't be more different on this issue. She would love nothing more than to federalize our elections, which I think is absolutely wrong for our country. So I came out with a political agenda for recovery and reform, which includes that. You know, another thing, when I am Washington State's next senator, I will pledge to hold 10 town hall meetings per year because I think it's important. I think it should be a standard that our elected officials are in touch with the voters and communicating with them on a regular basis. So it truly is the voice of the people. We need to ban taxpayer funds from ever going towards political campaigns. I always encourage everyone, though, you know, the worst thing we can do in this country is not vote. Use your voice and vote. I need everyone in Washington State to get registered and go to the polls and vote like your life depends on it, because it does. These elections are so important this midterm.
Smiley for Washington. That's where they find you online, don't they? Smiley, forwashington.com.
Smiley for Washington, come join the movement. Let's hold Joe Biden and Patty Murray accountable for their failed policies that are affecting us every single day.
Absolutely right. That's Tiffany Smiley. She has my endorsement for the U.S. Senate from Washington State. Ms. Smiley, thank you very much, and give my best to your husband. I don't know him, but I know him from a distance. A man who comes back having been blinded by a suicide bomber and says, I can still serve. And he becomes the first blind active duty Army officer. And Tiffany Smiley with those great ideas. You got to make sure the right person goes to D.C. for Washington State. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
The FBI came after me and took my phone. They surrounded me at a Hardee's and took my phone that I run all my business, everything with. They could have just, what we've done is weaponize the FBI. It's disgusting.
That is a very familiar voice. That's Mike Lindell. Yes, the pillow guy. And this is the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you thought the raid on Donald Trump's home in Mar-a-Lago a month ago by the FBI, with all the shenanigans the FBI has been up to, fake dossiers, wiretaps of innocent American citizens. And here's Mike Lindell. You know, this is the former crack addict. You've heard him on this show before, who managed to drag himself up by his own bootstraps and build a company that employs a couple of thousand Americans, makes its product in America. And you can joke all you want about bed sheets and pillows. The guy has become the pillow guy in the United States. And, of course, he got defamed widely after he came out in favor of Donald Trump years ago. You know, Better Business Bureau came down on him and everything else. And now we've got the Fibbies going after him. He was describing what happened the other night. He was coming home from a hunting trip with a friend of his, and he stopped at a Hardee's in Minnesota to get a burger and a Coke or something. And he says, cars pulled up in front of us, to the side of us, and behind us. And I said, they're either the bad guys or the FBI. Well, it turns out it was the FBI. This is what is insane. You have, and I want to remind you of something. Donald Trump is still under investigation as we speak on a whole bunch of different things. The Democrats have tried to make up everything. He's a Russian plant. He's a Russian mole. He got elected with Vladimir Putin's help. I mean, they have thrown everything at the wall trying to get something to stick. And one of the last things they're still investigating Trump for is, did Donald Trump use the Department of Justice or try to use the Department of Justice to go after his political opponents? Well, this is the DOJ going after political opponents. I mean, they raid Trump's house. They raid Mike Lindell at a burger joint. They serve subpoenas on anywhere from 35 to 50 former associates of Donald Trump. They have tried everything they can. And I keep reminding people, they say, well, and especially if you talk to people, and I have some friends and acquaintances who are not crazy about Donald Trump, and they know that I thought he was a great president, and he will be a great president again in January of 2025 after he's elected for a second time to the presidency in the fall of 24. But that's a ways off. But what's going on here is that the Democrat Party is using the DOJ and the FBI to go after not just Donald Trump and not just Mike Lindell and Bernie Kerik and a whole bunch of other really good Americans. They're going after you and me. I want to remind you of that. This is not just something, well, I'm not involved in politics, so I don't have to worry about that. Just remember, this is the same DOJ that under that sleazeball Merrick Garland, and thank God he never made it to the Supreme Court because he was this close, but he's heading up the DOJ. He's the guy who decided to declare war on parents who show up at school board meetings and complain too loudly that a boy dressed like a girl raped your daughter in the school bathroom. And if you think I'm exaggerating, that's the real case out of Loudoun County, Virginia, where a father shows up at the school board meeting and says, you folks allowed this trans back into school after he'd already committed one sexual assault on somebody else. And he shows up in a dress and goes into the women's restroom and rapes this man's young daughter in high school. And he shows up and complains too loudly. And what does Merrick Garland do? He sicks the FBI on parents in general, saying that parents are this kind of terrorist. And now they've gone after, of all things, Mike Lindell. Play the second soundbite for me, would you please?
I don't have a computer. Everything I do have that phone. Everything was on there. And and they told me not to tell anybody. Here's an order not to. Don't tell anybody. Okay, I won't.
Okay, I won't. I mean, clearly, Mike Lindell's probably getting the same point of view that a lot of us are. Oh, the FBI told you not to tell anybody? Hey, FBI, pound sand. You have become an evil agency. You are out there raiding people, seizing. I mean, right about the same time that Donald Trump's home was being raided, they literally stopped a member of Congress who was on a family trip. They pulled him over. They seized his cell phone. And what is it they're investigating? Oh, they're investigating January 6th. Well, what does a cell phone a year and a half later have to do with January 6th? I mean, the fact is they're going after people. They don't have anything to really, you know, they don't have a leg to stand on. But if they keep doing these kinds of things, what they're doing is they're making Americans scared to death. You're scared because you realize the government has awesome power. Now, it has awesome responsibilities, too. I mean, we might ask that the FBI pay attention to things like school shootings. Well, they didn't in Parkland, Florida, and 17 people ended up dead. And they were tipped to Nicholas Cruz before that school shooting, and they didn't do anything about it. I mean, they have missed case after case. They have missed terrorist attacks. They have missed clear warning signs that there's real danger out there. And why? Because they've become a political agency. Listen to Bernie Kerik talk about the investigation that's been launched against him, the former police commissioner from New York City.
He said he wanted to talk to me about my time with the election campaign, with the election fraud investigation. And I told him, I said, listen, I have a great admiration for you guys, for what you do, the line agents of the FBI. I said, but I have no trust, faith, or confidence in your leadership. So I'm not going to be talking to you at all.
Yeah. And I think, in fact, these days I would suggest to you, if the FBI shows up at your door, you take your Fifth Amendment and you say, I'm not talking to you. I won't say one word to you other than I'm calling my lawyer. And I'm going to tell you something. When America starts acting like this, do you know what America is becoming, sad to say? And it's becoming that because of the Democrat Party. This is not being done to Democrats. It's being done by Democrats, and it's aimed at the political supporters of Donald Trump. We're becoming like one of those third world dictatorships where the person in power, he's got the military, he's got the national police. And if you're a political opponent, if you're a political opponent of, say, Vladimir Putin in Russia, if you're a political opposition to the Chi-Com government in Beijing, they just send the police out and they throw you in a deep, dark hole. They disappear you, to use the term of art that's used to describe that. And you say, well, that happens in crazy third world countries. It's starting to happen here. When you see people being hunted down and served subpoenas, a lot of this is being done for pure intimidation. That's all they want to do. They want to intimidate people. And they did this all the way through the Trump administration, saying, if you decide to serve Donald Trump as a member of his government, your family is going to go through hell. Just like Neil Gorsuch's family went through hell. Just like Brett Kavanaugh's family went through hell. You're going to be sorry you ever had anything to do with him. That is not a representative form of government. That is starting to take on the hallmarks of a third world dictatorship. And the guy at the top, the head of the Biden crime family, well, that would be Slow Joe. He may not know where he is most of the time, but he knows the color of money, and he knows how his family got it, and he's sold out, and he's putting the rest of us at risk. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you care to, vote in our Twitter poll. We've given you two places to do that, at Lars Larson Show on Twitter, if you can tolerate Twitter. And if you're not a fan of Twitter like me, just go to the website at LarsLarson.com. Your vote counts the same there. I want to bring something to your attention. There is a railroad union strike that may happen this Friday. It would be the first major strike by the railroad unions in 30 years. And it is going to be tremendously devastating to the United States. We already have a supply chain problem. We've talked about that plenty of times. The actual cost is estimated, if the railroad shut down this Friday with a strike, the cost per day is $2 billion. That's a lot of cash. And just to put it in perspective, every single day, about 75,000 shipments, I think they're counting that as rail cars and tank cars and hopper cars and all the things that trains drag around America every day. They are absolutely critical to moving goods around this country. 75,000 shipments per day that won't happen because of the strike. And if you say, well, how do you resolve this? Well, there are a couple of ways. One, the unions and management sit down and come up with a contract. They have not been able to do that. So what's the other alternative? Well, when it comes to the railroads are federally regulated, and the U.S. Congress has the authority to actually impose a settlement. So what they did, Joe Biden named a, supposedly, at least it's supposed to be on paper, a nonpartisan commission to take a look at what the unions are asking for and what management is offering. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And usually in union contracts, some of it is about work rules, but an awful lot of it is about how much are we getting in wages? How much are we getting in health care? What are the mandatory breaks, this, that, and the other thing? Well, this nonpartisan panel came up with a bunch of recommendations. And you say, okay, well, why don't they use that? Joe Biden is the guy who has always bragged. And in fact, Mitch McConnell, who I'm not that crazy about, but he says the president is bragging about how much influence he has with the unions and how much influence they have with him. And yet, for some reason, Joe Biden has not been able to get anything put together to get the union and management sides together. So the Congress could actually impose this. But what have they done? The Republicans said, okay, let's tell the unions we have the authority to impose a contract on the two sides. And it's coming from this nonpartisan panel. So the Republicans say, let's do it this way. And what happens? Bernie Sanders, you know, the crazy man, the socialist, the commie from Vermont, comes out and says no. And he blocks the move. So on that note, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the program Mark Meckler, who's both a conservative and grassroots activist and president of the Convention of States Foundation and the Convention of States Action. Mark, it's good to have you back.
It's great to be with you, Lars.
If we needed, could we find a better example where Joe Biden has managed not to unify the country? I mean, because we have a great laundry list to pick from. But here's a great example where America is going to take a real hit this Friday if the unions go on strike. He claims he's got the ability to bring people together. Fine, bring management and labor together. You claim labor's your friend. He can't even get that done.
Well, look, I mean, I think he is the most divisive president in modern American history. He's been very dangerous for the country. I've not seen him unify anybody on anything. And so I'd be stunned if he could do anything with the unions. And frankly, he's even divided the unions, union membership against their union leadership. He's really good at dividing. That's about it.
Well, and how to explain this weird speech he gave in front of Independence Hall not so long ago. Weird, the way he presented himself, you know, in front of this blood red background was strange to begin with. Stationing two Marines behind him was weird. And then the speech he gave essentially condemned about half of America, including me, and I would imagine you as well.
Yeah, not even essentially condemned. I would say literally condemned. Not only did he say sort of ultra MAGA and whatever words he uses to describe us, but then he went on to describe some particular things. And he said basically anybody who is pro-life is a danger to our democracy. He said basically anybody who is pro-traditional marriage and family is a danger to our democracy. Essentially what he was saying is anybody who doesn't agree with everything I say is a danger to democracy. And it's hard to imagine anything that's more divisive than that.
No, and so the question is, where do we go from here? Because, I mean, unless Joe Biden decides to check out, and I kind of wonder whether at some point we're going to hear the president has decided that for medical reasons or whatever, you know, I have no firm evidence of that, but I can't imagine the Democrats wanting to stick with this guy. I think their biggest fear is that he's going to announce he's running for re-election in 2024 because he's not very competent right now, and he's certainly not doing them any favors by the way that that things have happened, that pro-Trump candidates are winning right and left. Another one won just yesterday in New Hampshire, and she may become the youngest member of Congress ever in American history, and she's a former Donald Trump staffer. She didn't even enjoy Trump's endorsement, as I understand it. Trump decided to stay neutral, and so Trump's winning, and Joe Biden is losing, except that Joe Biden's still got the control of the levers of power right now.
Yeah, he doesn't. It's a very dangerous situation because of that, because the majority of Americans in poll after poll after poll don't like what he's doing. And certainly the radical Democrats do. Certainly his constituencies, the radical constituencies, like what he's doing. But when we look at the polling, we do this kind of polling every week on a variety of issues. What we see is Republicans and independents are very unhappy. You know, we just did a poll on whether people think he's a divisive president or not. 93% of Republicans say he's divided the country, 64% of independents. Those are huge numbers. And so he's in trouble. I think the party is in trouble. They've been talking about some kind of blue resurgence or blue wave. That now seems to be fading. I think we're looking at a red wave as long as the Republicans don't screw it up.
Well, the other thing is, Mark, one of the things I've become afraid of is I think the Democrats don't have good ideas for America. I don't make any secret about that. But what I worry about is they're kind of like a cornered animal, that when it becomes cornered, it will start lashing out and striking out. And I think we're seeing that in the form of the FBI raid on Trump, you know, arresting poor Mike Lindell, the pillow guy at the Hardee's restaurant, you know, and pulling over Bernie Kerik or subpoenaing Bernie Kerik and demanding all these things, that as they get cornered and as they get more and more desperate in the next less than 60 days, that they're going to take more desperate measures to try to hang on to power. Are you concerned about that?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about it. I can tell you, you know, I'm concerned personally about it. It sounds funny, but we just went to our general counsel, had a memo produced telling us what to do if the FBI knocks on the door. And I don't think that's paranoia. I just think that's rational nowadays. We're going to share that with a lot of other organizations so that their leadership is ready as well. And I think there's another type of lashing out that the Democrats are doing, which is I think they know they're going to lose power. And so they're going to ram everything they can down our throats as fast as they can before Republicans take office in January. It's going to be very hard to roll a bunch of that stuff back.
Yeah, it is. I mean, as well, and I wonder, you know, I usually politicians like to stay away from any big moves as you head up to an election. But you're right. After they lose power in November, how much damage can they do on the way out the door? And it won't be just ripping the W's off the keyboards at the White House or things like that. That is Mark Meckler. He is the president of the Convention of States Foundation and Convention of States Action. Mark, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. When we get back, I'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll. Tell Alexa to play the Lars Larson Show. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. That's right, and it's the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. Your calls are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And by the way, I've mentioned the railroad strike that may be coming the day after tomorrow. It's coming that fast. And the attempts by Joe Biden, friends of the unions, to be able to bring something about, no, he can't get it done. And over in the Senate, the Bernie Sanders, the crazy communist, he doesn't want it solved, so he's blocked any solution from there. And I just wonder, is anybody else paying attention to this? Massive damage being done to your country and clear solutions available. And is anybody going to, well, if Joe Biden ever sits down for an interview again, he's not done an interview with a reporter in more than 200 days at this time. And at this point, if somebody surprised one of the big friendly network reporters who usually carry water for Joe and said, hey, you can have an interview with Joe Biden, wouldn't your first question be, Joe, you always talk about your relationship with the unions and how good it is. How about sitting down and figuring this one out so we don't have a national rail strike that halts 75,000 shipments a day and costs the country $2 billion and makes our current supply chain even worse? And by the way, where's Pete Buttigieg, the transportation secretary? You'll remember that last year about this time, he was taking 2 months off for paternity leave because he had a brand new baby and he had to take 2 months off work. Hold on a second. Where's Pete in all this? He's your transportation secretary. Is he doing anything about it? Now, this is crazy. We shouldn't have to have these kind of problems, and that goes well beyond partisanship. So on that note, let's go to Kevin. Hey, Kevin, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to say I think they're filling the swamp. The Democrat Party and all their poor decisions right now, and some people can't understand it, and it's basically leaving a path of destruction for the next elected president.
And where's that put them?
Explanation
no, but if they're going to lay waste to America, you know, whether it's Joe Biden running for re-election, whether it's Kamala Harris, who's almost guaranteed to seek the office, let's say another Democrat gets elected and you've wrecked the country. Where does that put them?
Well, in the ability to, to fix it and make it better. It'll be a lot easier to make it better because it's so poor.
So. Well, except that, Kevin, making things better costs money, okay? And so if you've wrecked the country and you've wrecked the ability of the United States to be the single most powerful, economically powerful country on planet Earth, and you've wrecked our supply chain, you've wrecked our energy supplies, you've wrecked all of that, and you've basically incapacitated the private sector in this country, what do you fix it with?
Yeah, and that's a good question. And, you know, maybe there's more to this that I don't understand, and I'm trying to explain it, and I really still fully don't understand it. But dependency, they want everybody to be dependent upon the government and everybody to be strung out, stretched out on their, income versus their, what it costs to keep their family and the food on the tables.
Well, and one of the considerations you should throw into that, Kevin, beginning of this year, mortgage rates were around 3%. Now they're closer to 6%. So they've doubled. And you say, well, what does that do? I said, well, one of the biggest job generators in America is building housing, not just houses, but apartments and condos and everything else. And you say, what happens to building housing when the materials you use, concrete and lumber, are expensive, and the labor you use is expensive, and the money you borrow to do it is expensive? What happens then? You say, well, you don't build as much of it. And what you do build is crazy.
I totally understand
and you totally get it, right? Because everything you use has gone up in price. And by the way, what kind of vehicle do you use when you're going out to a job site with tools and everything else?
Yeah, it's hard to make a change order when you just first went to the supply store to find out everything's doubled in price, and you're going to have to make a change order and justify it somehow and transfer the cost to the customer, and it's hard to explain it to them.
Yeah, it is, but I was curious. You drive a one-ton pickup truck?
Oh, no, nothing like that.
Okay. But for the contractors who do, is there an electric version of the one-ton pickup truck out there? Because they're going to tell you can't buy a diesel and you can't buy a gas starting in about 2 years. They're going to start cutting back the supply. So imagine all the people that you do business with who are contractors who literally need that one. I mean, there are a lot of people who drive one-tons that actually don't. They couldn't say we need it. Well, we tow our travel trailer with it or whatever. But the contractors do. And when you say, where's the electric version of the one-ton pickup truck? And they say, well, we've got one, but it only goes about 30 miles on a charge. You know, I'm just wondering when the construction side of things is going to say, when you want to deliver a whole bunch of lumber, a whole bunch of concrete, or a whole bunch of anything to a job site, there is not an electric alternative that gets the job done. And when you're told, well, we're not going to let you buy the gas or diesel version anymore, then what are you going to do? I'm wondering when those people are going to wake up. Kevin, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call. Glad to get your emails. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our Twitter poll. You'll find that at Lars Larson Show, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network, and a big welcome to our new affiliate in Forks, Washington.